On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We start with a pair of division administrators with the Public Service Commission. The PSC regulates public utilities in our state. More than 1,100 utilities are under its jurisdiction. Electric, gas, solar, pipeline safety, broadband. What do you want to ask the PSC? What questions do you have about proposals to build pipelines, transmission lines, or other projects in Wisconsin's energy network? We're at 800-642-1234. Christy Nieto and Martin Day are division administrators for the PSC. Christy heads the Division of Digital Access and Consumer and Environmental Affairs. Martin oversees the Division of Energy Regulation and Analysis. Christy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having us today.
And Martin, thank you for being here.
Kate, thank you. Thank you for having us. Early Monday morning.
Early Monday, right. Well, Martin, let's start with you. Next month, the Public Service Commission plans to lift its moratorium on disconnecting water, electricity, and heat services for utility customers with unpaid bills. Why end the moratorium?
So I think Christy might be able to handle this question a little better than I can, but I believe the moratorium was decided by the commission a couple weeks ago at their open meeting, and there was a lot of discussion, but probably a question better answered by Christy.
All right, Christy, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. So the commission, like Martin said, a couple of weeks ago made a decision to essentially set dates to unwind or ramp down various emergency temporary provisions it had put in place to protect customers and utilities around all of the unusual and difficult circumstances that have come with COVID-19. And one of those emergency temporary provisions was around disconnecting. So usually utilities cannot disconnect service during the winter months. And then come April 15th, that moratorium on disconnections ends. So this year, that moratorium stayed in place. And the commission, when looking at that decision and looking for a path to unwind that temporary provision, set a date of July 15th. For disconnection notices to be issued by utilities, and then July 25th for the first available date for a disconnection to happen. And a number of factors, I think, went into that decision, and a lot of that was feedback and comments filed in the commission's proceeding. A lot of that was a matter of allowing sufficient time for customers to enter into payment agreements in time to be established before the first disconnections could occur, notices could go out.
Do you have any indication from the utilities how much financial pressure they're under due to unpaid bills?
I can probably take that one, Kate. Christy, you want me to take that one?
Yeah, that'd be great, Martin.
Sure. So as Christy mentioned, you know, the commission took early action, realizing, you know, the severity of the COVID emergency and really tried to balance all of the interests, you know, both utility ratepayers, you know, the utilities and the state. And in balancing that, they put a number of measures in place to really try to protect everyone, given the uncertain times. The utilities reporting so far, and the commission has asked the utilities to report back on things like unpaid bills, different financial pressures that they've received. We've just started getting those reports back. You know, there's not a lot of complete data yet, just because the systems take a while to get that information. But the preliminary results are that the the unpaid bills are definitely higher than historical averages.
Yeah, We Energies was reporting its amount of unpaid bills has grown by nearly 17 million compared to its 3-year average.
Yeah. So those numbers are definitely up, and the commission has put a system in place where the utilities are allowed to defer those expenses, and then at some point the utilities will, you know, deal with those costs, and then the commission will have an opportunity, along with the public and the other stakeholders, will have an opportunity to kind of talk about and discuss and put forward proposals on how to deal with that.
We're talking about Wisconsin's public utilities with two state regulators, Martin Day and Christy Nieto. They're division administrators for the Public Service Commission. You can join in. What questions do you have for the PSC? What do you want to know about the regulation of utilities? What are your top concerns with our state utilities? We're at 800-642-1234. Christy, let's look at broadband. The pandemic has forced so many people to work remotely. There's telehealth now, and there's, you know, more urgency to improve access to high-speed internet. Are there new efforts underway to address that immediate need from the pandemic?
There are definitely, like you said, Kate, the need for so many to work from home, for all the students in the state to be able to study and learn from home, telehealth, all of these critical needs that arose and were really highlighted and underscored by social distancing and COVID-19 just have really highlighted the gap, the digital gap that we have in Wisconsin around access to broadband, whether it's areas that are in rural Wisconsin that don't have access to broadband facilities, or whether it's an issue of households that can't afford broadband service, or there are other adoption issues. So a few things that we've been working at the Public Service Commission and that we began working on immediately in response to COVID-19 on more of an emergency basis was we set up an internet and phone helpline for the public. So it's basically a one-stop shop for anyone in the state to call for whatever reason a person doesn't have access to internet or to telephone services. We have folks on the line available to walk through and to help either, maybe it's identifying a provider, maybe it's identifying a private discount or identifying lifeline benefits, a grant project that's happening nearby that might result in an improved service, and just walking through what can be kind of a complex landscape to navigate for folks who are looking for help in that regard.
The state wants everyone to have affordable access to broadband by 2025. How close is that to reality?
Yes, it's a complex problem, and that is definitely an aggressive goal. It's something that is doable, but it really will need a multifaceted, focused approach, including funding for broadband expansion grants. It'll include digital access and affordability initiatives. There's quite a bit of work to go. And then there's, of course, federal funding and build out going into that as well. But as we sit right now, according to the FCC's 2020 report, we have about 410,000 people in Wisconsin who lack access to a fixed broadband service with a basic speed of 25.3, which is 25 megabits per second download.
We have a pair of division administrators from the PSC, the State Public Service Commission, Martin Day and Christy Nieto. We're discussing utility oversight in the state amid the pandemic. What questions do you have about broadband access? What do you want to know about the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line in the Driftless, or Enbridge's Line 5 in northern Wisconsin, or another project regulated by the PSC? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with more State Cap on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have a pair of division administrators from the PSC, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. The PSC has three full-time commissioners who regulate utility ratepayer changes and the building of large power plants, major transmission lines. What are your top concerns with Wisconsin utilities? Do you see problems with reliability or access to electricity, heat, water, broadband? Have you sought help from the state for unpaid utility bills? Did you get relief? Join in 800-642-1234. PSC Division Administrators Martin Day and Christy Nieto stay with us. Let's take a call now. Judy is with us from Irma this morning. Hi, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm glad that these commissioners are on. My concern are the high increase in our utility bills in the last 10 years. Our state used to have one of the lowest utility rates in the Midwest, and now it's gone right through the roof. A lot of that is from the fixed rate fees, which have gone sky high. I was absent a month from my home in Irma, Wisconsin, and my utility bill was $80, and that was with using virtually nothing. Not even the refrigerator was on. So I'd like to see a reduction in those fixed rate fees. I don't think that that's at all consumer friendly. And I'm pretty outraged by this trend over the last few years. And I think what it stems from is utilities are wanting it because of solar potentially depleting their fees.
Judy, thank you for bringing this to the table. Martin, I want to pose Judy's question to you. What is going on with these fixed rate fees?
Yeah, the fixed rate fees and the overall, let's put it in the broader context, is the rates that utilities are charging. The fixed rate fees, probably about 6 to 8 years ago, a lot of the utilities had made changes to their rate structure and increased their fixed rate charges. A lot of that came out of the discussion just of how utilities are recovering their costs, whether it be variable or fixed rate. And there was a lot of discussion, as I said, about 6 to 8 years ago. Since that time, the fixed rates, at least for many of the larger investor-owned utilities, really haven't changed significantly. Now, overall rate impacts, if you look at those over that period of time, they have gone up, but, they've gone up less than the rate of inflation. So they're keeping pace, at least with the rate of inflation. But, yeah, the fixed rate charge, is an issue, and it's an issue for many low-usage customers. So it's something that's highly debated. The stakeholders, such as Citizens Utility Board, does a lot in terms of, advocating on behalf of customers on that issue.
What are these fees going toward?
So the fees overall, again, it's not just one component of a utility or an energy bill for a customer. You really have to look at it in context of, the fixed charge they pay and the variable rate they pay. So a lot of times when there were, or most cases when there are increases in the fixed rate, there were decreases in the variable rate, the rate per kilowatt hour or per therm of gas that you're using. But all that is generally dealt with and handled in a rate proceeding before the commission.
Judy, thank you. Let's bring in Phil now in Kingston. Hi, Phil.
Hi, thank you. I live in Kingston, which is in Green Lake County. And the thing here is just the sparsity of internet and availability. The maximum speed we get here right in town is only 10 meg, and that's only been recently been increased in speed. It was always 5. Some of the areas only had 768 kilobits, and they're paying $50 a month, 768, only through squawking and begging. Maybe we can get maybe 5 meg. It's all POTS line out here, or you have to go with mobile broadband. Of course, that's expensive, and you have data caps. So with broadband expansion, I would hope, that we could get some decent speeds out here. Under Obama, trying to change the FCC regulation, he was saying, Obama was trying to get the change where you couldn't even call it broadband unless it was at least 25 meg. We just can't get that out here.
Phil, thank you. I want to field that to Christy. Why is high-speed internet still lacking, particularly in rural communities?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's depending on the community and area, there are so many different factors that go into it. But of course, when you're looking at areas of Wisconsin where there's lower population density, those areas become higher cost to serve. And there's a direct relationship there. Sometimes it also has to do with the terrain of an area as well. And sometimes the facilities that are already existing in an area may be aging facilities offering slow speeds that need to be either upgraded or overhauled. And so I think that's a great point. There are some areas in the state that have maybe 10-1 speeds or slower speeds than that. With the way that we use the internet today, those speeds are slow.
Is there enough competition to get speeds up and to get people access and choices?
I'd say certainly not in those areas that are already underserved and unserved and struggling in that regard. That's where the state's broadband grant program comes in and where the FCC's funding programs come in. Essentially, providers don't find that there's sufficient return on investment to build out to those higher cost to serve areas, be able to provide service and be able to make that investment. And so they may seek grants or other funding sources to meet that delta or gap.
We're talking
in those areas of the state.
We're talking about Wisconsin's Public Utilities with Christy Nieto and Martin Day. They're division administrators for the Public Service Commission. Let's bring in another call, another question. Tom is with us from Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. My question is, a pipeline, natural gas pipeline, went in northeastern Wisconsin about 10 years ago, and I noticed it skirted the Oneida Tribal Reservation. And I'm interested in some comments between the powers between FERC versus tribal lands.
Tom, thank you. Martin, couldn't you field that?
Yeah, I can't speak to the specific project that he's mentioning, that Tom's mentioning. There's a weird dynamic, as he mentions, between the interstate pipelines and the intrastate pipelines. Obviously, the intrastate pipelines, which are primarily run by the utilities to provide service to customers, those are the utilities that the Public Service Commission regulates. To his question about relationships with federal agencies and tribal organizations, I can't really speak to that. That's not an area that the Public Service Commission regulates.
Martin, earlier this month, the commission estimated Wisconsin utilities would cut carbon emissions by nearly 40% in the next 6 years. How exactly would that happen?
Yeah, so this is an area where things really are dynamically changing. And a lot of the provisions or a lot of the proposals and applications that we have before the Public Service Commission are around utility scale solar projects. That's an area where the utilities, hearing from customers primarily, at the desire of customers, utilities are really responding and changing over their generation fleet from, natural gas and coal generation plants to a lot of wind and solar plants. So if you look at the dockets before the commission, the utilities and other groups are really investing heavily and proposing a lot of solar projects. And the commission has approved a number of large-scale solar projects in the state. We anticipate that those requests will continue to come before the commission.
Well, to that end, let's bring in Mark in Wisconsin Dells with a question on solar. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions, basically. One is really a comment. Which is, there are several incentives for installing solar panels, and I think it's really unfair that in some areas the buyback is the same as what a person is charged. In my area, I get 3 cents back, and I paid 13, and I don't think that's fair. I think it ought to be uniform statewide. And the second question is, in order to save CO2 emissions, why can't we just turn off all of our lights at night in the towns and not be able to see ourselves from space?
All right, Mark, thank you. Christy, can you address the incentives on solar? I think
and I I wonder if when Mark is talking about his buyback, if that is something, Martin, would you want to address in terms of the rates from the utilities?
Yeah, I can probably, it's a good question, Mark, and it's an area where the commission has heard loud and clear from the public and a lot of different groups. To that end, a number of months ago, the commission opened a parallel generation generic investigation. So this is an area where the commission is going out and asking for comments from all the different stakeholders in the energy industry, because they know, buyback rates and parallel generation, the items you mentioned. This is an area that's evolving, and it's an area where the commission, through the generic investigation, is really looking for a lot of input to understand and ultimately at some point, make future decisions on that.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's been great.
Christy Nieto and Martin Day are division administrators for the State Public Service Commission. Coming up, we have Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. The state cap continues after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on the line. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have called for law enforcement to put an end to violence and destruction after protesters attacked a state senator and toppled two statues near the Capitol last week. How do you want the governor to respond? What do you want out of state lawmakers amid the demonstrations against police brutality and racial injustice? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Robin Voss is a Republican state representative from Rochester and the Assembly Speaker. He represents part of Racine County and surrounding areas. Representative Voss, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. We're nearly a week removed from the protests. State Senator Tim Carpenter was beaten as he stopped to take video. What is your reaction to what happened?
You know, it's really disappointing, and it should have never occurred. There's no doubt in my mind, and I think among every Wisconsinite, that individuals have the right to peacefully protest. It's in our Constitution. And of course, it's something that everybody supports as a way to get your ideas out. The challenge that I have is when the Madison mayor, and unfortunately, it seems like Governor Evers, allowed peaceful protests to become violent on State Street several weeks ago. And then, of course, again, just this last week when they tore down statues, threw bricks and rocks, and then ultimately beat Senator Carpenter. So, you know, peacefully protesting, that's America. Violently protesting, that needs to be stopped, and people need to take responsibility for actually preventing it from happening.
What specifically do you want Governor Evers to do?
Well, I think that, first of all, we need to arrest and prosecute the people who commit crimes. The fact that they're only against property really shouldn't matter. If you commit a crime, you should pay the price. And the whole idea of doing peaceful protesting is to be able to affect change. And I think that is usually what occurs when a peaceful movement works inside the ability to do that. But if they decide to go outside that ability to be able to commit crimes, they need to be prosecuted.
So
even the folks who broke in on State Street, no one's been held accountable for that. The gentleman who caused the riots last week was released almost immediately by the Madison mayor, and we still haven't seen a single prosecution occur yet.
Will more arrests lead to peace and reconciliation?
Well, if they commit property crimes, they have to be arrested. That is the law. We don't just look the other way because the person might have a righteous cause. If you commit a crime, even when during the civil rights protests, we saw that people did it in a nonviolent way, they still were able to make change, but they did it in a way that actually helped garner people's support for their efforts. And I think what's happening with these violent protests is actually pushing people away.
The Assembly wrapped up its regular session work in February. And as you look back at your work this session, what efforts have addressed Wisconsin's racial disparities?
Yeah, Wisconsin actually in many ways was ahead of the curve. Back in 2014, Wisconsin passed one of the first in the nation ways to deal with making sure that if there was a charge of abuse by a police officer, that it was done by an outside independent agency. So you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, an old boys club trying to protect an officer. Just this last session, we also passed legislation to make sure that we had standardized regulations for the way we deal with body cams so that we ensure that we have have the ability to store the data and do it in a way that makes sure if something does happen, we have a record to do it. So Wisconsin's really been ahead of the curve in many ways, and we should keep trying to make sure we make progress.
We're talking about state politics with the top-ranking Republican in the Assembly. Speaker Robin Voss with us. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Representative, I mean, we're the state with the worst racial achievement gap in the nation. Our infant mortality rate for African Americans is the highest in the nation. Your colleagues in the Assembly had put forward proposals last December around Christmas, called it the Disrupting Disparities Package. And the package had six bills aimed at reducing instances and impact of racial disparities. Is it time to work on these bills?
You know, I'm always open to the idea of working to try to make progress on any topic, right, affecting anybody in Wisconsin. The thing that I have focused on the most is it's really got to be education. We need to make sure that we have schools that educate children, because we all know if you have a good education, it's the most important step on the ladder of life. So the thing that frustrates me the most is that we have school districts around the state where we have this incredibly wide disparity among kids. And we see that that's where a lot of the efforts need to go. In Milwaukee, as an example, they spend some of the highest per pupil in the entire state and unfortunately have some of the worst outcomes. And that's why so many parents in Milwaukee choose to utilize school choice, where they can pick a better school for their kids. And that's, I think, where it needs to begin. We need to make sure that we have the tools for parents to be able to get a great education for their kids, because that's how we break the cycle of poverty. It seems far too often that people want to just spend more money on the same broken programs. And I am one who wants to sit down and reform the programs to make sure that the money we spent is done a lot more wisely than what we've done in the past, where really the results haven't been anywhere near satisfaction.
Let's look at Governor Evers' package of bills that would, he said, increase police accountability and transparency. He hasn't called the legislature into a special session on these nine bills. Should the legislature return this summer to take action on policing issues?
Well, the sad thing about the way Governor Evers chooses to operate is he didn't just, reach out to anybody. He didn't sit down and talk about it with folks who have concerns. He didn't sit down and talk about it with the legislative leadership. He certainly hasn't reached out to anybody involved in policing. So I think that's part of the challenge, that Governor Evers continues to have this go-it-alone approach, where he throws ideas out there that aren't necessarily vetted or, you know, allow for more input. So what I've said is we're going to do like we did on the last two police reform bills. They were widely bipartisan. They were worked on. It took a little while, because in order to get it right, you don't rush something through. But it requires an awful lot more communication than it seems like Governor Evers started this effort with. So my hope is over the course of the summer, we continue to work and listen. I've spoken to, of course, the members of the Black Caucus. I talked to their chair to hear what her ideas were and gave her my word that we would work together on areas that we could find common ground. But that's how conversation and change happens. It's by actually listening to the other side, those you might agree with, those you might disagree with, and not just throwing out a bunch of ideas in a political statement more than a policy statement.
Well, specifically, what legislation would you support to address police practices around the use of force?
Well, the good thing in Wisconsin is that we already have many of the police departments utilizing the tools that Governor Evers has talked about. The city of Madison, just as one example, puts out a use of force report where they are put down how many interactions they have had. And the percentage of interactions, I think it was 2018, where they had to use force was less than 0.7%. So the vast majority of interactions between the public and the police are done exactly how we want them to, nonviolently, without the use of force, and hopefully in a way that helps to change the society for better. So things like that, where more information can come out and we make sure that the public knows that use of force is a very rare occurrence and not something that is something that's done on a regular basis anywhere near that.
Let's bring in Jim now, joining us from River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thank you for letting me on the show today. I'm calling because of Senator Voss or Assemblyman Voss's comment that you have to protect property. Well, I think a lot of the laws in this country have been designed to protect property and the wealthy, and they're trying to make some similarities between that and use of force and death and by the police and, you know, killing people and protecting them. And I don't think the two quite should equate the same, you know, lost human life and loss of property.
Yeah, so, Jim, thank you. I think Jim's saying, you know, property can be insured and rebuilt. Black lives can't. Why is there an urgency to stop property damage but not to stop police violence?
Well, there's an urgency to do all of the above, and that's why if someone commits a crime, I actually was on with a group of African-American pastors about a week ago, and one of the comments that struck me the most was when one of the pastors said, we need to prosecute people for their crimes regardless of what their skin color is and regardless of what their job title is. So if you're a police officer and you commit a crime, you should go to prison. You should be prosecuted. And that's why in 2014, Wisconsin was one of the first in the country to pass legislation that requires an independent investigation. And in the vast majority of cases, when somebody does something wrong, they've been prosecuted and gone to jail. The difference is we also need to say that if you own a home and that's your entire life investment and somebody comes and throws a firebomb in it, I don't think we just turn the other way because the person happened to be protesting for something that might be an idea that you agree with. The idea is if you commit a crime, you should be going to jail and be prosecuted, whether that's about firebombing somebody's duplex or if it's, taking somebody and using force in a way that's not legal.
The governor supports banning the use of chokeholds and no-knock search warrants. Do you support that position?
I support the idea of banning chokeholds. I've already talked to the folks who've gone through the academy. That's another one of those where if he had spoken to the people who actually run the department, they actually don't teach that in the police academy. They haven't for quite some time. So certainly that's an easy one to do. I do not support getting rid of no-knock search warrants. I certainly think that we need to ensure that they are used in a way that guarantees the safety of those who are going in. But if you're using a no-knock warrant, usually that's because it has to have special permission from a judge. But let's assume you're going into a drug house where they are armed, protecting $1 million worth of illegal narcotics. You certainly don't want to give them notice right before you go in to arm themselves. So I think there's got to be limited use of it. And I think in Wisconsin that already occurs.
Let's bring in Cole now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole.
Hi. So interesting last comment. And I think it's really telling about what Speaker Voss is actually focused on. Mr. Voss, you've been the speaker. You've been in the state legislature for, over 10 years now? And just now that people are rioting, now that people are out in the streets and making noise, you're talking about possibly making some change. But you keep coming back to, the crime and this aspect. And that really shows what the issue is in this country. I mean, people of color have been forced to live their lives under systemic racism, and equating this to, we need to take care of, worry about the drugs. And that just continues to go on painting a picture that this is their life when really this has been something forced on them.
Cole, I'm going to pause there. We're talking with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and you can join in with your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we have Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on the line. We're moving through issues with him. What questions do you have for the top-ranking Republican in the Assembly? Have you filed for unemployment since the start of the pandemic? What's your experience been like? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Representative Voss, I want to give you some time here to respond to Cole and Sun Prairie about the shifting sentiment on the Black Lives Matter movement and why Black Lives now matter now to politicians.
Well, this is what's amazing to me is that every single Wisconsinite's life has always mattered. What the challenge is to take out the racial aspect and make sure that we are doing things that benefit everybody in our state. So we have great schools, a good healthcare system, and that we treat everybody fairly regardless of their skin color. That's my goal, and that's what I think we've always done in the Assembly. The sad thing is when Cole heard me reference someone who would use a no-knock search warrant where a police officer might go in and get harmed, why don't you just imagine, Cole, that the police officers entering into the home are African-American? And the people who are making the drugs are white. There was no implication that the reverse was true, and it shouldn't matter what the skin color is of either of the participants. We need to protect the police, and we need to make sure that if somebody commits a crime, regardless of their skin color, that they are prosecuted in a way that is fair, but also make sure that we hold people accountable if they commit a crime and that they pay the penalty that society has imposed.
Let's bring in Rick now in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Rick.
Hello. Hopefully you can hear me. I'm in the car. I apologize.
We can. Yep.
But I wanted to call in on a couple things. First of all, I'm going to have to, because it seems if we don't, we are considered unconstitutional or that we don't believe Black Lives Matter. I believe in the Constitution. I believe that it should be followed. I also believe in Black Lives Matter. I believe in all lives matter. I don't think it's a true racial issue. I think it's a hatred issue. We have to stop hatred in America. We have to stop hatred in all colors, in all the genders, et cetera. But last week there was something that shocked me of our governor. Our governor, as all elected officials, puts his hand up and he swears an oath. To uphold all laws. And when he was challenged and they asked for his resignation, his defense was the individual that was calling for his resignation did not believe in the First Amendment. Well, the First Amendment does not state that you can do violence. It doesn't state that you can do destruction of property if it's public property or private property. It doesn't state that you can be an arsonist.
Rick, I'm going to have Representative Voss here. Final thoughts before we go on to other topics.
It's just an example where, you know, listening to the last two callers, each of them have valid points. We want to make sure that the Wisconsin legislature focuses on things that we can actually achieve and make forward, moving progress. So that's why, as I said before, we have already passed good legislation in the past. I know that we will work together and do it in a collaborative way. We're not just going to throw a bunch of bills out there without having spoken to anybody. We're going to do it in a collaborative way. And when we come back after the election, I am very confident that Wisconsin will continue to make progress.
Let's look at unemployment. The state received more than 27,000 new unemployment claims through Thursday. How are you feeling about Wisconsin's response to these claims?
This is one of those things where, as a legislator and just as a Wisconsin resident, I am angry at the way that the Department of Workforce Development has been handling this. Back in April, Governor Evers gave us a set of ideas that he wanted us to enact, which would help to deal with the crisis where we saw literally hundreds of thousands of people unable to get their benefits. We passed all of those ideas, the basic one, waiving the one-week waiting period and allowing the governor to transfer as many people as he needed from throughout state government to help people get their benefits. And here we are almost 3 months later, and we have people who still have not gotten a penny. There's 500,000 people who still do not have their benefits. And I know that people are angry and frustrated. They call legislators. Our offices are trying to help. But just a couple simple things that should have been done a long time ago. Our hours at the DWD are 7:30 until 3:30. They extended them until 5 o'clock. Where in the world would you say that you only extend them by an hour and a half as opposed to saying, let's work two shifts a day? Let's make sure that we go 7 days a week. And that did not happen. That's a failure of Governor Evers.
The Department of Workforce Development says it's hired 1,000 more people to handle unemployment claims since March, 450 new staff and call centers. Where do you need staffing levels in order to be able to turn around these claims?
Well, part of it is the staffing levels, and that's why, using outside contractors, that was a good idea, but it took a long time to get it up and going, much longer than it should have. But the idea that we're only going to have traditional business hours, 7:30 until 5, when we have hundreds of thousands of claims waiting, is something that would never occur under a Republican administration, because we would say, look, let's work double shifts. Let's pay people overtime. Let's figure out how do we deal with this pandemic in a way that gets people the dollars that they need as quickly as possible. And when Governor Evers and his DWD blame it on an outdated computer system, there are a dozen states that run the same computer system that we do, and they are doing a better job than we are. The other thing that really frustrates me when we look at the computer system is people saying, well, you know, the legislature should have done something about it. Well, frankly, Governor Evers in his last budget and Governor Walker under the budgets he submitted never said they wanted to put the money in to update the computer system because it was working just fine. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of things that we could do differently going forward, and we're certainly going to take a look at that. But it's not about the future. It's about getting the 500,000 people, 500,000 people who do not have their benefits and getting them out the door as quickly as we can. And that entirely falls with the executive branch where they implement the laws. The legislature can't do anything about it other than pass the proposals that Governor Evers gave us in April, which is why we need to get them going.
I don't know if I've seen a half million, but let's look at the additional joblessness payments of $600 a week that run out on July 25th. Is the legislature putting forth new proposals to replace the federal benefit?
We are not. The federal government has the ability to borrow and print money. The state of Wisconsin, of course, does not. We already know that we're going to have a sizable deficit because of the slowdown in the economy and the stay-at-home order, the reduced sales tax revenues, reduced income tax earnings. We won't even know the full extent of the damage to the state's budget until we get to July 15th, where everybody has to have a deadline to pay their income taxes. So we should know sometime in July the actual state of our budget, but we certainly don't have the ability to replace the money that the federal government's borrowed.
Last week, a committee blocked a rule proposed by the Evers administration to bar landlords from charging late fees until August. Would that be helpful to Wisconsinites in this who are not able to receive their benefits yet?
Well, let's just remember that landlords have payments of their own. So if you have a mortgage at the bank, you have utility bills that you have to pay, certainly the ability to have 3 months where you do not have late fees was helpful to tenants. But at some point, that has to come to an end and people need to pay their bills. They've gotten unemployment benefits to be able to help pay their bills. They've gotten a stimulus check, and they've also had the ability to defer their late fees. So I think it's appropriate that we now say, as the economy is open and more people begin to return to work in a more traditional way, that we also say you have to pay your rent.
You represent part of Racine County, which has the state's second highest rate of coronavirus infections per capita. How well are local authorities and hospitals handling the situation?
They're doing really well. I would encourage anybody who wants to follow on a more regional basis to go to the Wisconsin Hospital Association's website, WHA.org. You can see by region how each part of Wisconsin is doing. And I think by and large, even as I saw a story, I think it was in yesterday's paper, comparing us to Minnesota, where we have about the same population. But Minnesota has still had a stay-at-home order where they have a pretty severe lockdown still in place. And they have had over almost twice as many deaths as the state of Wisconsin. So I think we've done a really good job, because the number that's the most important to watch is hospitalizations. And Wisconsin's numbers have been fairly steady in that area, even as more folks have been identified. So identification is, of course, important, which is why we have testing around the state. We certainly know that that is a key to helping contain the spread. But we also need to make sure that we watch our hospitalizations. And in that area, Wisconsin's doing quite well.
Well, Representative Voss, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate. Have a good day and happy 4th of July.
You too. Robin Voss, Republican Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly. He represents part of Racine County and has been elected since 2004. Just ahead, we learn about the River Alliance of Wisconsin's new agenda for protecting the state's water. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.